The continuation of this morning's meeting. With due respect, we are supposed to be back by quarter to two as requested members. Then I told them for 2 o'clock we are starting. That was in mind. And then I didn't find any. Please don't take it out. Thereafter, members will then engage with the presentation. then for now you can start with introducing your team, then we take it from there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee, and Deputy Minister, thank you for your support. Chairperson, members of the committee, I'm accompanied by my colleagues, starting with Advocate Rodney de Kock, who is the Director of Public Prosecution for the Western Cape, and as well as his capacity as representing all the DPPs. For obvious reasons, we cannot all be here. And I'm also... I'm also accompanied by Mr. Dawood Adam, who is a special director in the Office of the National Director. He is the special advisor, but he's also the head of Office for Witness Protection. I'm also accompanied by Ms. Wulelua Makeke, who is the Chief Director of Communications, Ms. Hanika Fanzail, the Acting Chief Director of Finance Management. Director, Chief Director Communications.
Okay.
Anika is the Acting Chief Director Finance Management.
Okay.
And Marty Alberts is the Acting Chief Director Strategy and Performance Management.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Honourable
members, then this is today's Thank you, Chairperson. We have the honour of presenting to you the annual performance report of the National Prosecuting Authority for the period 2017-2018. Let me say up front that we really welcome and respect the very necessary oversight powers of this committee, and we acknowledge the benefit of our engagement with the committee because we believe that it can only serve in improving service delivery and in building confidence in the administration of justice, and more particularly confidence in the NPA and the application of the rule of law and transparency. The annual report reports on the collaborative efforts of all those who serve in the National Prosecuting Authority. And that's why I wanted to emphasize the presence of Advocate Bikok, who represents the various directors of public prosecutions. The NPA is sub-program 4 of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And you would have noted in the presentation of the Department of Justice that our report is also included, but then we then expand on the relevant work that we do. We remain committed to the realization of the goals set by government through the National Development Plan and in giving effect to the long-term vision of the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster Delivery Agreement in order to ensure that all people in South Africa are safe and feel safe. In this regard, we provide a coordinated prosecuting service that ensures that justice is delivered to the victims of crime. And let me say upfront that the NPA is at the center of the criminal justice system value chain. And we perform a significant role in ensuring that everything we do as the people's lawyer is in the interests of the victims of crime as well as the whole of the South African society. The year 2017-18 was characterized by outstanding performance in most of the spheres of the organization, notwithstanding the budgetary and resource constraints that we have experienced. In the ceaseless fight against crime, specifically government priorities, we have remained a focal point. The performance successes and in some areas improvements were achieved as a result of the dedicated and committed workforce within the NPA. And as we have stated, budgetary and other resource constraints have taken their toll on the welfare of prosecutors, other staff, their families, and on the institution itself. And this is evident in the high time spent on employees and the high amount of money spent on employees' wellness services. We have provided you with an overview of our report in the form of various slides. And if I may, with your permission, immediately proceed to slide number 5. They are, unfortunately, some of them are not appropriately numbered. Just go to slide 5. Well, that deals with the NPA's contribution in respect of the sub-outcomes of the medium-term expenditure, rather strategic framework. And these are also contained in the JCPS delivery agreement. And these are outcome 1, that is reduced level of contact crime, outcome 2, an efficient, effective justice, criminal justice system, and then securing cyberspace, outcome 5, ensuring domestic stability. And outcome 7, reducing corruption in the public and private sector. And in order to achieve this, we have identified and we work on 3 strategic objectives, and you will find that in slide 7. And these are the 3 strategic objectives: increased successful prosecutions, ensuring that profit is removed from crime, and ensuring that threatened witnesses and related persons are successfully prosecuted. And then the next slide gives you an indication of the 4 sub-programs which assist us in achieving the aforementioned 3 strategic objectives. And that is the National Prosecuting Service, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, the Office for Witness Protection and Support Services, which fulfills the functions of administration. The National Prosecution Service is further categorized into the general and specialized prosecutions, and these are the SCCU, the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit, the PCLU, Priority Crimes Litigation Unit, and SOCA, the Sexual Offenses and Community Affairs Unit. Chairperson, as regards the organizational and environmental overview, we need to emphasize that the NPA places great reliance on support from key stakeholders in the criminal justice system, especially the police, that is, the police special units, other anti-corruption role players such as the Special Investigating Unit, and the judiciary. Although the NPA is one of the critical pillars in the criminal justice system value chain, our performance is intrinsically linked to the support and efficiency of our stakeholders. In particular, the South African Police Service, the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, the Judiciary, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Legal Aid South Africa, and the attorneys and advocates profession. The NPA works closely with other stakeholders in the JCPS cluster, and these include, amongst others, the South African Revenue Services, the Financial Intelligence Center, the State Security Agency, the Reserve Bank, the Department of Public Service and Administration, the Department of Home Affairs, the Public Protector's Office, the Competition Commission, the Department of Planning and Monitoring in the Presidency, and the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. The NPA represents government internationally as part of the South African delegations at the Financial Action Task Force, FATF, and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that is the OECD. In enhancing close collaboration with all stakeholders, the NPA participates in the anti-corruption task team, which is chaired by the head of the DPCI, and which also includes the SIU, the FIC, the South African Revenue Services, State Security Agency, National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, and other stakeholders. To this end, successful prosecutions largely depend on the ability to have comprehensive and finalized investigations, having obtained the relevant, reliable, and admissible evidence and presenting these before the courts. The NPA continued to be presented at the forum of the heads of entities convened by the Director General of Justice to ensure effective delivery in the criminal justice system, and the ability to ensure that trial-ready cases proceed timelessly remain challenging. Despite remarkable performance achieved over the last reporting period, we acknowledge that there are many areas which still require improvement. The reduction in court utilization and the inability to optimally employ or use court hours and days hamper productivity and result in an increase in case backlogs. And the placing of too few cases on the court rolls for trials adds to the burden of low court utilization. We accept that the utilization of court hours is not adequate and does not instill confidence in the criminal justice system. And if we move to slide 9, the NPA participated at the quarterly Provincial Efficiency Enhancement Committee PEEC meetings, which are chaired by the respective judge presidents. We also participate in the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee meetings, which is chaired by the Chief Justice. And this serves to improve giving effect to the norms and standards which have been issued by the Chief Justice, and to improve on the challenges around case flow management in striving to alleviate the many operational challenges. As we have reported to the committee previously, budgetary constraints have resulted in vacant posts not being filled, which in turn placed severe strain on the NPA staff establishment. This has also affected the aspirant prosecutors program, which is critical in sustaining the organization's professional staff component. I will, in a moment, give over, hand over to Ms. Van Zyl to deal with the budget issues, as well as perhaps just briefly with the budget outcome. But we have indicated in the slide that come after slide 9, our performance in respect of the various strategic objectives. Now, just briefly, we have achieved in respect of that objective, that is increased successful prosecution in respect of conviction rates in the higher courts, in the regional courts, as well as in the district courts. The percentages of success are given in the slide. I really need not go into those. I will just briefly dwell on those areas where we have not achieved. And you will also note that we have had significant achievement and success in respect of the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit, which is on slide 11, as well as in organized crime, which is slide 11 once again, as well as in sexual offenses, which is slide 12. However, there are two areas or indicators where we have not achieved, and that is on slide 12. That is in respect of the conviction rate with respect to the trio crimes, where our target was 85 and we only managed to achieve 82.9%. My colleague, if needs be, Advocate Dikok, can talk to that, but the trio crimes, you will recall, consist of mainly your business robberies, your car hijackings, as well as your house robberies. Experience actually shows that mainly in respect of your business robberies, your bank robberies, as well as your carjackings, the success rate is quite satisfactory. The problem arises in respect of your house robberies. But we have made a commitment that we will explore our failures in that respect and find ways of improving on that. The other area in which we did not achieve our target is in relation to violent protests and industrial action, where our target was 74%, just move forward, where our target was 74%, and we only managed to achieve 68.8%. But I think it needs to be mentioned that once again there are significant challenges which are systemic in a sense, mainly because you hardly get credible evidence in such instances. So you also have witnesses being reluctant to testify, insufficient identification of perpetrators, and significant discrepancies between witness evidence. But once again, and again the other thing is, in respect of this category of crime, there are at times fluctuations. So we don't think that we have had a sufficient inflow of cases to be able to make a determination of whether we should be able to reach this target. But I think Advocate Dikok, if needs be, can speak to that. And then the next area is in respect of the asset forfeiture cases. We completed 563 forfeiture cases with a value of 350.95 million. And then we recorded 324 freezing orders, which are valued at 4.4 billion rands. And then the asset forfeiture unit exceeded its target in relation to the value of freezing orders relating to corruption, where the amount, I think I have to be very careful here, because I know that we haven't actually achieved that target. Will you indulge us, Chairperson? Yes, that is, we did not achieve our target in respect of the value of completed. We achieved our target in respect of the percentage of completed forfeiture cases. We did not achieve our target in respect of the value of completed forfeiture cases.
Okay.
Just go back to the
789.
Person? Yes. The person.
Go back to that one. Can I go to that one? Yes.
That's the one. So in other words, here the distinction is the percentage of completed forfeiture cases which we achieved. And then the value of completed forfeiture cases. So in other words, the distinction there is between the percentage and the value. But I must add that the indicator in respect of percentage of completed forfeiture cases is actually a new indicator which we had to include as a result of queries from the Auditor General. And then the other area where we did not achieve our target in respect of asset forfeiture is in respect of the value of recoveries in relation of corruption, where the amount benefited is more than 5 million rands. And then the distinction there is the focus is on corruption cases where the value is more than 5 million rand. And that arises from the JCPS cluster. Starting from page 1 to 2, the numbers appear right at the bottom, but then for some reason or the other, from slide 9, the numbering has been cut. It does not appear there.
Well, Honorable Swart, Honorable
Mumana,
are you able to check the
cases?
Because this one, this is not colored. It doesn't
have a...
Not
properly
numbered,
please.
Oh, your file?
The file is going to follow the file.
Okay.
Now, those are the two areas in respect of asset forfeiture where we did not achieve our targets. And in respect of witness protection, which is slide number 19 and 20, the Office for Witness Protection achieved both its target, which is no witnesses or related persons were harmed, threatened, or killed while on the witness protection program. And this is 17 years in a row now. And there were 297 new admissions onto the program. And then the number of witnesses in the program currently stands at 179. And then in respect of all the witnesses who were on the program, 27 life sentences were imposed where witnesses on the program testified. And then 719 sentences of direct imprisonment were imposed. And in conclusion from my side, and before I deal with just one matter that perhaps may be of interest to the committee, and then hand over to Ms. Van Zyl, I wish to bring it to the attention or to tell the committee that in September this year, South Africa hosted the International Association of Prosecutors Annual Conference and General Meeting, and the theme was Prosecutorial Independence, the Cornerstone of Justice to Society. And we believe that it was quite successful. And we also wish to record or to have it recorded that on the 16th of October 2018, the National Prosecuting Authority will be celebrating the 20th anniversary of its existence. And just one other matter that is probably currently in the public interest or domain, which members of the committee may have an interest in, is the matters that we're currently dealing with in relation to the so-called state of capture matters. We have previously reported that we are currently seized with a number of these matters, and these have been divided into various legs. Without going into the details of the various legs, suffice it to say that we are currently busy with assisting the police in investigations. There is a team of prosecutors, investigators from the DPCI who are currently dealing with the matter. But the one matter that we have prioritized and that is already in court is the so-called Christina of the investigation. This matter is on the court floor, the Bloemfontein Regional Court, with eight accused persons who are currently on bail ranging from 10,000 rands to 2,100 rands with various conditions. And there are also three companies that are charged. On the 17th of August 2018, the state requested a further postponement to finalize investigations and in order to provide a copy of the docket to the defense. And during the course of the postponement, bail conditions in respect of certain of the accused were relaxed. The court has ordered that a copy of the evidence in the docket and indictment be served on the accused persons by the 30th of November 2018. And the next postponed date is the 4th of December 2018. We believe that we are on course for that date. And the Asset Forfeiture Unit have obtained a preservation order of 140 million rands in respect of the Estina property. The charges include fraud, conspiracy to commit fraud, contraventions of the PFMA Act, money laundering, theft, and then contraventions of Section 214(1)(c) of the Companies Act. We are currently busy with financial analysis. There is evidence that is being requested from the United Arab Emirates. We are currently busy with that process. The Minister of Justice has been to the United Arab Emirates, and MLA has been signed. We are currently in the process of liaising with our counterparts to have one or two of our prosecutors to go there with the purpose of speeding up the process. And the team is also currently busy with an analysis of evidence from the banks as well as from the internet protocol addresses. They are also busy with lifestyle audits. As we've said, we have formally sent mutual legal assistance requests to the United Arab Emirates and India, and they are busy obtaining witness statements from service providers, government officials, travel agents, and we are also currently working on a forensic report and busy preparing a final draft indictment. The docket comprises of documents in respect of the CIPC information, in respect of, and just to indicate how voluminous it is, 19 companies, 303 bank statements, bank accounts rather, which still have to be analyzed. And that is as far as I can take it. With your permission, may I then request...
You still have time?
Well, I'm chair.
I mean, when I say you,
we mean all of us. Just
on. I didn't see that in Hoffman.
Oh, Mr. Hoffman.
Oh, how was it? Okay. So you are handing over to. Okay. No, we are not engaging. They are still presenting.
I'm handing over to Fanzai.
The money lady.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Baiti and members. I'm going to go to slide 24. This slide and the next one just give an overview of our audit outcomes for the previous financial year that ended the 31st of March 2018. On the first slide, you will see the budget split by economic classification. 24 and 25. The one is for economic classification. Yeah, and the one is for SIP program. On the first slide, what I would like to highlight here is the second column, the shifting environment. In this column, you will see that there's a 58 inflation of our budget. This is environment that was received from the Department of Justice that assisted us at the end of the previous financial year because we didn't have enough budget in our budget allocation. So they gave us 34 million, which we used to pay performance bonuses within the NPA at the end of the financial year, and they also assisted us in goods and services in respect of our Microsoft license fees that was payable also at the end of the financial year. So the Department of Justice assisted us here. The next slide, you will see that 58 million again that was given to us, but this is per SIP program. Here you will see that the big money went to our core, the NPS SIP program, the 32 million, and the bulk of that relates to the compensation of employees, the payment of the performance bonuses. And then in support services, the 23 million is again the Microsoft licenses that was paid from this SIP program. Okay, then the next slides going forward is to have a look at our future NTS budget allocation and what the future holds. The first slide is just to give you an indication of the NTF growth over the NTF period. Here you will see the first column. This is also per economic classification, the growth per economic classification. The first year, we've got a negative growth, the 2.51%. Now, this was is about 94 million less than what we've spent last year. The main reason for this is the budget cuts that was introduced by Parliament in December last year that affected our goods and services badly. Then for the outer 3 years, we do have an increase of 7.6, 7.2, and 6.39 respectively, which gives us an average growth of 4.71% over the NTF period. Now this average growth is lower as our CPIX, so we in big problems this current financial year. The next slide, this is just a split per economic classification to show you that the compensation of employees is our cost driver, our payment of our people. That contributes to 88.8% of our budget. And then the next one is goods and services, which is 9.88. This percentage for compensation increased drastically over the years because normally goods and services, the ratio is 80-20%. So we're going behind that. The next slide is just also the increase for the NTF period, again the 4.71%, but this now is just a split for our SIP program, where you can see the core of the NPA, the NPS SIP program, increased with 5.5%, where we pay the bulk of our prosecutors. And then a concern is our Office for Witness Protection with only 0.21%. This is because the cost of the witnesses is very high, and every year we shift funds to them, that it doesn't have an impact on the NTF budget allocation for the outer years. Our support services also has got a very slow increase in the NTF period. This was due to the budget cuts of the goods and services, and because the bulk of our goods and services is within our support services, where we pay centralized budget items. So this is where we pay the fleet cars, our accommodation facilities, our IT services. So that is also giving a tremendous strain in that program. The next slide is just a projection for the current financial year. This is where we stand at the end of September, where we've got a projection of 72 million on our warm bodies. This is only our warm bodies. Now, if you can recall my presentation I did in one of the previous meetings, we had a projection of 168 million. The difference is due to all the resignations we had during the first 6 months. We had over 150 resignations in the first 6 months of the financial year, so that had an impact on that projection, but we are still short on paying warm bodies. On goods and services, we've got a projection of 53 million. Again, this is for our contractual obligations. We don't have enough goods and services money to pay contractual obligations. This 53 million includes Microsoft licenses that we have to pay, otherwise we're sitting without computers. Over the NTF period, our projected shortfall on goods and services is 472 million. This is also for the contractual obligation. In goods and services, we have done quite a number of initiatives to try and save costs. We did look at all the scopes of our contract, and in order to reduce the cost, we've limited all traveling where possible in the NDA, but the high number of our vacancy rate does have a negative impact on our subsistence and travel. We're limiting all new procurement only to high priority, and catering is only done in exceptional circumstances. the transfer and subsidy projection of 9 million overspend that you see on the slide as well, this relates to the leave gratuity we paid to our high-level officials leaving the NPA due to the high attrition rate. The next slide is just a historical shows the historic budget allocation for our compensation of employees. Now, if you see in the last 4 years, we had a shortfall on our compensation of employees. Prior years, we still had a little bit of leverage in goods and services that we can environment money from goods and services to compensation. And then last year, we received the assistance from the Department of Justice. This financial year, we don't have any movement within goods and services to compensate for the, our shortfall in compensation of employees. So we can't do any environment within the NPA. The next slide, this is just to elaborate on the challenges within compensation of employees. Yeah, we've got a full monitorium on the filling of posts since 2015-16. So in the last 2.5 years, we've lost over 500 people, which we haven't replaced. So if somebody leaves the organization, that post becomes unfunded and it's not full. Currently, our vacancy rate is standing at 19%, of which 17% relates to our prosecutorial post. The, as already mentioned by Dr. Mahiti, the aspirant prosecutor program has also had a big impact on the sustainability of the NPA. And then also, as discussed by Dr. Mahiti, our employment wellness program that has increased due to this. Now, the last two slides is our wish list that we say these are the things that we don't have money for. Now, the first line is the shortfall on our warm bodies, and that's also for the NCS period. So in this slide, you don't see the shortfall for the 72 million for our current financial year, but in the outer 3 years, we also don't have enough money to fund the current warm bodies in the NPA, which means we still can't appoint any new person in the NPA. Then we've got the aspirant prosecutor program for the costing for 150 aspirants for the 3-year program. And then if we start the program in the outer years, we have to absorb those aspirants, which is the next line of the costing. Then we've got the NPA vacant post, our 1,064 post, the costing for the post if we would be able to fill all the vacant posts. And then of that 1,000 posts, we have identified 244 posts as critical posts, which is the costing of 464 million. And then we've got presidential appointments that's also critical. We've got a vacant DPP post and the costing for that. And the last slide is just a narrative of what I've just explained under unfunded priorities. And that's the end of the budget presentation. Thank you, Dr. Ramirez.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's just two issues that I had omitted to address. Right towards the end, but just before the budget review. And that is the performance of the priority crimes litigation unit. Now, that is not measured against any specific indicator, but we have reflected it there. The priority crimes litigation unit reported on two key noteworthy cases. That is the appeal in the case of the state versus Henry Orca, and then the reopening of the Ahmed Timor inquest, which, as we now know, has been finalized. And then the other thing that actually relates to what was raised earlier in respect of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, that is the exhumations. We are part of that process through the Missing Persons Task Team, which is managed by the Priority Crimes Litigation Unit. And just to confirm that our main focus really is on matters raised or referred to us in the report of the TRC. But then we also can become involved, especially in relation to dockets which we currently have, which may either have been closed, where, for example, there have been convictions and people have been sent to hang, as in the Gallows Exhumation Project, who has become involved in exhuming some of those persons. And as we report, we have had DNA matches that have been obtained, which will then lead to a possible exhumation. And then there was also the exhumation of the remains of 13 United Democratic Front supporters who were hanged. And then currently they have closed 31 cases. And then the last issue that I just need to touch on is the Legal Affairs Division. It deals with civil litigation, and it also provides sound legal advisory services to the National Director. It has handled 1,732 civil actions, which is actually substantially higher than the previous one. And then 77.3 civil claims were won, or there were successes in 2017-18 as compared to 56.4 in the previous financial year. And then they also dealt with applications, that is ordinary applications, but applications that may very well be related to criminal proceedings. They have done 287 applications as compared to 256 in the previous year. And then there were 65 agreements that were vetted as compared to 64, which is a significant increase of about 28%. That is all. Thank you. I don't know if any of my colleagues have anything to add. DPP, do you have anything to add? DPP?
Thank you. Very briefly, Chairperson and Doctor, just on the state capture, because I'm one of the supervisors in terms of the MOA requests, there are a total of 17 in these matters which are flagged urgent and fast-tracked. But the innovation introduced is through MOUs signed between the National Prosecuting Authority and prosecution agency heads of other countries. So we're looking at both informal and formal cooperation. The informal is to be able to pick up the phone the agency directly on the other side and say we're in the process of sending one, because these are complex matters that retards these complex investigations, because that's very valuable information that is required for these kind of cases. So that's the kind of innovation that the NPA has introduced. Thank you.
I just wanted to mention one statistic from our civil litigation that I think people may find interesting. We've been keeping sort of statistics for the last few years of how many of our civil claims we've won. And on average, about 65% of cases are won by the NPA. So only about a third of cases are successful. But we've also looked at what amount is actually paid out in the civil claims, and which I think hasn't really been done in government before. But the interesting statistic there is that on average in our civil claims over the last 3 years, we're basically paying out less than 5% of the amount claimed. Okay, that includes the cases where we pay out 0%, obviously. But even in the cases we lose, the percentage is about 15% of the amount that is claimed is ordered by court. So we've had quite a lot of engagement with the Auditor General, because you may recall that they report vast amount of contingent liabilities in the financial statements. And in regard to the NPA, at least, we've now persuaded them that we should use a factor that is much closer to the actual likelihood of us having to pay based on the statistics that we now have. I think justice is also looking at the possibility of introducing a sort of similar system, but I think the importance is that we should have a more accurate report on what our contingent liabilities are from the sort of massive sums that often get reported in government annual reports and so on.
Hoffmeyer, are you referring to, let's say, civil claims?
Yeah.
Mr. Hoffmeyer,
yes.
In terms of civil claims, are you referring to, I mean, civil litigation, maybe claims against the NPA, amongst others,
mainly
for malicious prosecution?
Yeah.
So in most cases, you've got 65% success rate?
Overall, yeah.
Overall,
yeah.
Okay.
Are you done for the other?
Yes.
Yes. No, thank you for my time. We still have been. Okay, honorable members, any comments, questions? Okay. Is it up or?
Yeah, it's light.
It looks like this. And later.
I didn't allow the meeting.
Okay, let me start upstairs. Honorable Hon, Honorable Sal, Honorable Bumnana, Honorable Maila, and the last will be Honorable Fabuen. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Acting Chair. Maybe let me start where we finished off now with the civil claims and the malicious prosecution, and say, well, while it's obviously good news to hear that the NPA is successful in about 2/3 of the cases, I think if we turn that around, it should still be of a worry that there are some cases of malicious prosecution ultimately that do occur. So I would like to hear how the NPA also deal with those cases internally where our courts have found in the favour of plaintiffs. And specifically also given what happened over the last few years, and one, for example, if we must refer to a specific case, one can just think about, for example, the recent withdrawal of the case against Dramat, which one might think, if I was his attorney, I would advise for a case of malicious prosecution. So if we could be advised as to what strategies are in place internally to prevent malicious prosecutions. Maybe going chronologically as to some of the last comments made and in respect of the Timor inquest, if we could be updated as to other cases where people during apartheid died in similar circumstances. There's, for example, the Neil Agard case, whether those inquests are all about to be reopened for the sake of revisiting that now with transparency and with true accountability, with the aim of true accountability. Then in respect of the performance targets, Madam Acting Chair, I think it must be said that the NPA or those who were part of the delegation at the time would recall that we as a committee asked serious questions as to why some of the targets in this year's ABP was lowered dramatically. And I just think we must to get a proper perspective, for example, refer to conviction rates in our district courts, which was lowered dramatically. And now we sit with a situation that, yes, targets have been met, but then if we look at real numbers, then there's actually been a further regression. So in the High Court, for example, the number of cases finalized ultimately are fewer than the number in respect of even the target set, even though the percentages indicate an achievement or a green achievement, if we must use the AG's terminology now. I see from the annual report that there's some cases where the reversal is also true, like for example in the trio crime situation, where there's actually an increase in the numbers, but now the percentage indicate that the target has not been met. So once again, my question is just this. I think we must get to a situation where we can compare apples with apples going forward in respect of APPs and targets to get a better picture of the real performance. To be fair, I think as the Deputy Minister has also alluded to, and I think the Acting National Director, there's good progress with the conviction rate in respect of sexual offences. But then if we look at the available data, it's also true that it would unfortunately seem that less and less of the reported sexual offences end up in our courts, which is not obviously not necessarily to be ascribed only to the performance of the NPA, but I think the complete picture must still worry us. Then in respect of sub-program 2 and the slides there, I would want to make the statement and get some reaction to say that it would seem as of late, while we're good with obtaining freezing orders, we struggle to finalise those cases, and then even when we finalise those cases, for some or other reason, what we're able to recover seems to be dwindling. For example, the one interesting statistics there is under the heading of value of recoveries in relation to corruption, where the amount benefited is more than 5 million, the ultimate actual achievement was only obtaining or getting back 2.54 million, if the figures here are correct, and that must be of a worry to us. Then in respect of the state capture cases, I think we welcome the feedback and also the international cooperation and so on. The former national director talked about the seven legs, and I don't know if we could be appraised about the progress, if any, in respect of those seven legs. And then the one worrying aspect, also having read the Sunday newspapers this weekend, where the former public protector expressed some frustrations that that according to her, some of the supporting documents to her state of capture report, in her view, would have or could have or should have led to more or less immediate prosecutions. And then we bear in mind that the way I understand it, in the case of the Free State High Court, where that order ultimately was not given with finality, there was information that the National Prosecuting Authority failed to put in front of the court the specific bank statements, which was part of the evidentiary documents already contained in the state of capture report. And if that's the case, why and how did that happen? And then a last question in respect of the top leadership positions of the top leadership of the NPA, Madam Acting Chair. And we know that the President, I think as recently as yesterday, we learned now that he is to be advised by a special panel in respect of the appointment of the National Director, and that's obviously his prerogative. But in the meantime, we also sit with a situation that in respect of some of the Deputy National Directors, they were asked to give reasons why they should not be suspended pending an inquiry, and I think at the time the President used the specific words or alluded to, in any event, to the public confidence and trust in the NPA. So the question to the Acting National Director is simply this. What are the deputy national directors in questions doing at the moment when they report for duty, and what steps have he in the meantime taken to ultimately mitigate and protect the NPA also in the worst case scenario from a further loss in confidence whilst this whole saga is unfortunately not concluded yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Acting Chair. Firstly, I just want to thank the NPA for its work under very, very difficult conditions. I think it's very important to highlight what the Institute of Security Studies has said, that it has highlighted our prosecutors are working under extremely stressful conditions due to the declining budget, which has resulted in staff shortages, a high vacancy rate, and inadequate resources. So the challenge from my perspective is how do we expect as MPs and Parliament to hold the NPA and other departments accountable when we're not giving sufficient funds? We have still got to exercise our oversight, but I want to thank you and I want to say that we need to do everything in our power, but we do understand the fiscal constraints that we are operating under. That having been said, we then need to make sure that we are using the available resources that we've got to the maximum. Now, one of the issues highlighted by the Auditor General was the 47.3 million, which was under fruitless and wasteful expenditure by the department, but it related to the asset forfeiture unit as a result of curator fees. Now, these things, maybe Mr. Hoffmeyer will remember when he was head of that unit. This goes back a number of years. Now, I understand the asset value was about 20 million, and we ended up paying 47 million for curator fees. So these are some of the things that one's got to avoid going forward. Got to maximize every cent that we can spend. So the issue is, how does one ensure that you are keeping your prosecutors? And it's disturbing that you have lost 615 prosecutors, 1,064 posts, high vacancy rate. How can you be expected to deal with these complex matters if we are not keeping that? And I understand that a number of those are going to become magistrates as well. That seems to be the biggest recruiting. And maybe, Chair, one needs to find a way that is it right. There must be some attraction that's historical, seems to be the career path, but we need to find a way of, and I think it was mentioned, retention of experienced prosecutors. So those are just general comments. What I would like to ask is some of the approach of the NPA. I'm trying to understand how you would, when you notice that there is a prevalence of a certain crime, such as referred to in your report, cash in transit heists being a prevalent crime, and then you would decide to work closely with the law enforcement agencies. How do you decide on that? And would you consider, and I want to raise the issue, maybe Advocate de Kock can mention this, the issue of the burning of the trains in the Western Cape that is becoming impossible. Is that not something that would require a similar approach for a higher level intervention, given the fact that we amended the legislation for infrastructure damage, that is becoming intolerable? I saw a train burning the other day, and it's, I think we need those high level interventions. The issue of political killings in KZN, that seems to require a high level intervention as well. The issue, and when you're dealing with murder, would it be unfair to suggest the farm murders is something that one, farm workers and farm murders is something that would require a similar intervention? Those are on that crime aspect. Then the special investigating unit, there was a bit of a interaction between the NPA and the special investigating unit where they indicated their concerns about what they saw as a lack of progress with the continuation
of cases that were referred to the NPA, and there was an ongoing interaction between Advocate Matibe of the SIU and, one presumes then, Advocate Abrahams. And Advocate Matibe of the SIU expressed his concern in the holdup of 686 cases. The NPA responded by explaining the SIU cases are referred to the Hawks because only them are mandated to conduct criminal investigations. But they countered by saying, but they've got forensic attorneys, accountants, qualified advocates. So there seems to be an issue. Has that been resolved? Because that cannot continue. I've said it continually in Parliament where there are matters that's referred to the SIU, but if there is no follow-up of those matters, then it is a matter of great concern. On the issue of the state capture, I think I want to share my colleagues' concerns that we need more information, because one of the last, and it's referred to in your annual report on page 20, and we got the seven legs, and I understand there's an eighth leg. What is eight legs? Spiders. We don't want spiders. We want scorpions, not spiders. And we want hawks. Yeah. 17 cases with the asset forfeiture potential to the collective value of 50 billion have been identified. This is in your annual report. And dealt with. Billions of rands are expected to be recovered in future in respect of the various investigations spanning throughout the country and across the globe, presently and extending over the next 3 to 5 years. That was then, and can you give us an idea where we are now? You spent a lot of focus on the Estina dairy issue, and we understand the challenges there. But just, I think we need more detail. There's a lot of interest in that regard. I've just come from the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee, where we had the Auditor General, we had private auditors firms there. There's 27.7 billion rand irregular expenditure that's been reported, up from 4 billion rand. It is astronomical, it is astounding. The auditors explained to us that they have reported it to their auditing board, who in turn have reported it to the Hawks and the police, but no action has been taken, or very little action. So it is a matter that is in the public domain. We understand the complexity of these issues, but it is, if you consider that when the Public Protector's report on state capture was brought out, she specifically referred it to the NPA and to the Hawks in terms of her powers of her act. And I've said it continually, there was sufficient prima facie evidence at that stage to have taken further action. And we are now a few years down the line, and billions of rands have left the country. And we are grateful that the mutual legal assistance has now been signed. We're hoping that it will be recovered. But we do need more information on this progress. I'd like as much detail as you can. If possible, you might want to give it to us in writing if we don't have enough time, but I think we do need that type of information. We don't have to wait, and I'm not saying you are, we don't have to wait for the outcome of the Zondo Commission of Inquiry. We can take sufficient action at the moment. So, Chair, from my side, those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good people. You do good work under very difficult circumstances. I just wanted to find out about what has, first of all, has been said. I've not been there, by the naughty people called journalists. They publish so many things which may not be true. One of them could be related to the collision that is alleged to be there between the prosecutors and the, my colleagues, the lawyers, who were suing the government, that the matters are being settled, and a huge amount are being, for especially Department of Health and Department of Correctional Services. Now I was thinking of resigning here quickly because it's very easy money there. They get kickbacks. Have you heard that? And how far do you think you, how far have you gone if you did investigate that? Also cases involving cybercrime cases which were withdrawn, involving hacking, this is what the papers are saying. That's the first thing. So how if you have read them, and you know, do you know, can you bring some light on that? Secondly, I was wondering, how far do you people assist police, or let's say empower police as well as prosecutors in certain areas about the crimes committed in those areas? I'm trying to be more proactive rather than reactive in your approach. For example, I went to a police station next to the sea, most of them. They don't even know there's anything called Avalon. So the Chinese people just walked through, like those who stay, walked through there, and police don't even know that they have to arrest. The prosecutors don't even know that there's such a crime. There is also another thing, the finance, what do you call it, domachonis, what do you call them, microfinance lenders, something. It's a crime for them to take the IDs of the old people. Do the prosecutors know that? Do the police know that? I'm trying to find how does the NPA serve the ordinary people on the ground? Or are they just reacting to what is in front of them in the gate? These are financial matters of our people. And it is also not allowed, it is illegal for any micro lender to take money, to take the card of a pensioner, you know, and take money from a pensioner. Do the police know that? Is there any criminal case that you successfully followed up and you successfully had success in it? So I was asking about the question of your approach towards being proactive. This is part of the plan, the question of the plan, your plan on transformation, what is called transformation plan. Do you just do the same thing for years and years and years, from being in first at work to the last time when you retire? What is the position for 34 years? Do you have any plan at least to transform the society, so that people feel that this is a different society? This brings me to what I like very much, and I think you know about it, the use of African languages in court. I think you're expecting that from me. I say this to the prosecution in particular because you find ordinary policemen who don't even know English give you the basis of your case. You win or lose according to the statement that was given by that person. If for example, these were in the African language, the policeman knows that, the person knows that, and he is not an expert in interpretation. Just But only just he writes it in his own language and the people read it and understand in their own language, this is what I said. And then it comes to you. Then you carry on in that language, which is not your point, which is the problem of the justice and so on. But if everything is done in that way, a good example in the Western Cape, you find somebody's writing in Afrikaans, policeman writes in Afrikaans, everybody knows, everybody speaks in Afrikaans and so on. Then there's justice. Now you have here, take this person, he's in an African country, he now has to move to Europe, speak English, and everything is done in English, and everybody's locked. And that is what I'm saying, your plan of transformation. Now, the other one related to disputes, for example, how far do you include? I know you are basically Roman Dutch law lawyers. Do you include the problems, the solving of problems by in the African way? For example, dispute between spouses. You know, I think you'll agree with me that in most cases this interdict may result into further crime. People are being killed. I think you have got cases like that. And yet if you, these people who were, before they got married, there are two families. Bring the families together and say, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? Why don't you talk to your daughter? Why don't you talk to your son? Must everything just go to court and go there and take somebody and put in behind bars? Does it really affect? Do you? What is your transformation plan regarding including the African values and principles and policies? Or you just carry on like that? Do you have any problem in doing so? In criminal cases, do you involve the victim's family and so on? The other thing, and this is a question, please try and answer honestly. There are cases, there are people who did not go to TRC, but there are known criminal cases I committed during apartheid and during colonialism. And others went to TRC, but they didn't get amnesty. What have you done about that? Now you are running up on after the state capture, because it's the in thing. But what about those, the people who have died, and there's evidence, even in the TRC, that people have been killed by so-and-so, and so-and-so, disappeared, and people have not made any clothes on. What are you guys doing relating to such cases? I don't understand where malicious proceeding. If you can just say enlighten me. I have the term malicious prosecution. Mm-hmm. It applies to who? Does it apply to people perhaps who are intelligent or so-called, or does it also apply to the ordinary people who are put in prison every day, arrested and put in prison and prosecuted, and then the matter is being lost? What is the position there? Does the law protect you? If so, how far? Or, I mean, how does it become malicious prosecution? And where's the line? And now what does that person say when he, how do you actually prove that I was maliciously prosecuted? Can I get a clear explanation on that? And if so, do you need any assistance from us in terms of changing the law and trying to protect, or what can we do? The other one is there are delays really in the prosecution. You'll agree with me. That somebody is being taken, put into court, following day, first time he comes, oh, it's the first time you come, so we postpone the matter. So it means you send the person to prison, he goes there, there's overcrowding. and you forget, and then this guy, the policeman disappears, and then, and so on, the postponement, the delays that are happening. I say this because we have got, we oversee also the Department of Correction Service, and we've got a problem of overcrowding. Now I'm requesting you guys to try and limit such delays if possible, and understand and be part of the problem, I mean, of the solution to the problem of overcrowding in prison. For example, you say no pay, or it's so much pay, just like that, without even investigating whether the person has got money or no money. You say, okay, it'll be 500 pay, and you think the person is not working. He goes to prison, he stays there, because he's not going to pay that pay. You, this is what normally happens. Can you tell me what are you doing in trying to assist the problem of overcrowding in prison? I understand that, and I want to say thank you for the success. I think the rate of your success is a bit high, which I think is good. Well, it may be bad for correctional service. Correctional service. Because it means that they're going to get a lot of people. That your success is like that. But do you not also think in terms of asking for other forms of punishment other than incarceration? And if so, how far can you do? I mean, this thing, I'm saying this in the question of transformation. You may think that you need to involve the communities and see, for instance, in certain cases, what can be done to try and limit incarcerations in prison. Well, I think that is basically it.
Well, thanks, Chair, and maybe let me appreciate the presentation. Just few issues, Chair, for me. Indication here is that the NPA is dealing with cases relating to state capture. Now, on the other hand, we have the Commission, which is dealing with state capture. So I just want to understand which must come first. Does, do we go to the Commission, and then after the Commission investigates, it must refer issues to the NPA, or what actually must happen? Or do we have to run them parallel? Then what message are we sending? But I'll need your advice on that one. There is an issue here about a full moratorium on the filling of post. I just want you to elaborate on this particular issue. Who imposed this moratorium? Does it affect all posts, including those that you view to be critical?
No.
Okay, then where is it leading? When will it end, this particular moratorium? Now, the other issue is that you, as the NPA, you are participant in the integrated justice system project. I just want to hear from you how you view your contribution in that particular project. If there are gaps that we have identified, which are they, and what advice can you give to ensure that the project becomes a success that we all yearn for? And lastly, Chair, just to congratulate you on how you are dealing with the witness protection program. I think you are doing a very good job, and you must keep it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. A few comments from me. Let me follow my colleagues by congratulating NPA for working so hard under very, very difficult circumstances. Severe shortage of prosecutors, but at least you managed to perform your duties as the NPA. My few comments relate to on financial. Honorable Saul touched on the 47.3 million on creator fees. I won't touch on it. And then you overspend on goods and services. And then maybe if you can just share light on that. And then the issue of 34 million from the department, environmental shifting. I hope it was for cost of living adjustments, isn't it?
No.
Did it cover all affected employees or just a few of one? Another issue is commending you on the issue of the issue relating to Comrade Ahmed Timon inquest. So I would like to know whether you, as per the inquest recommendations, did you manage to take on prosecution of the former apartheid security cop who allegedly was responsible for the murder of Comrade Ahmed Timon. And then I'm a bit concerned about this departure of prosecution to the magistracy. Are you not having a retention strategy for all these experienced prosecutors? Because eventually it will have a negative impact in fighting of crime. It will have a negative impact of the good work the prosecution authority is engaged on. So that will be... And then the Steinhoff case. Any update on it? Thank you. So for
intentions in the course is to actually limit the times within which you will have to argue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be less. Thank you. Chairperson, I think I will respond hopefully to all of the questions raised by Honorable Horn and then Honorable Swart. And then I will request my colleague, Advocate de Gaulle, to attempt to answer the questions raised by Honourable and I will also respond to the questions that you have raised. Save for the question relating to Ahmed Timon, I will ask Annika to respond to the questions that you raised. With respect to Honourable Holmes' question in relation to violations in those matters, where there's malicious prosecution and the claimant has actually succeeded. Well, obviously, and that's something that I personally have raised with the directors of public prosecutions when I was still responsible for the National Prosecution Service. Certainly, one needs to make an investigation as to how it came about that there was, in fact, a malicious prosecution. Because you must remember that once there is actually finding that there was a malicious prosecution, then that means in the first instance there shouldn't have been a prosecution. And more worryingly, that the prosecution itself was not honest but was malicious. So is that element And my belief is people should be disciplined for that. And if we even have to go to the extent of having people becoming personally liable, then I think that's the attitude that we should take. But I think the good thing is that will only be in very limited instances. But certainly I do believe that people should be held to account, and especially if there's a court finding that prosecution was malicious. That's my belief. And then on the Tmall and related matters, the question was whether that is the only case that we're dealing with, or whether there are other cases. And for the honourable members' information, in fact, we are currently seized with the Neil Agate matter. They have approached us. But I think one must remember that in all the cases that we have currently reopened the inquest, that was, well, as a result of the cooperation as well as the insistence of the family members. But we are currently busy with an assessment of the other related matters, and the Priority Crimes Litigation Unit is dealing with those matters. And then there was also the question of the lowering of the targets. That's a difficult one, I must admit, because we ourselves in our planning are faced with dwindling resources, prosecutors leaving, actually non-filling of vacancies. Can we actually afford keeping the targets as they are? My personal view is, well, look, we should at least keep them where they are instead of reducing them. Well, I can tell you here and now that some of my colleagues, including this colleague who sits here with me, do not agree with me. So it's something that we amongst ourselves debate. But I believe that from management's point of view, it's not a wise thing to reduce targets, no matter how difficult your circumstances are. I mean, the real question is, in a business sense, is if your productivity is not growing, and then, in fact, your tools of productivity keep on going down, should you keep on increasing your production targets? That's the real question. It's a business question. Different businesses, and by the way, different managers answer that question differently. So I personally do not think that it's a good idea to reduce the targets, although I also understand the other side of the argument. And then just to correct you in respect of the trio crimes, if I understood you correctly, you seem to create the impression that we achieved our target. We did not achieve our target.
No, I said in respect of real numbers, you did better.
Oh. Oh, yes, okay. No. Yeah, again, that's something that we are prepared to engage with the committee on these matters, because these are matters that we still have not yet settled into something that's really helpful. Because remember, our targets are actually intended to assist us in achieving better results going forward. But we accept that observation and criticism, and certainly DPP, we will go and have a look into that. And then there was an issue around our struggle in finalizing, a few cases. I can understand that more specifically in relation to corruption cases where the value involved is more than 5 million rand. That's really a JCPS indicator, and there's still a little bit of a struggle, in actually, right from the onset, identifying those cases. We have had a similar debate when I was still with the SCCU in respect of this sort of matters. My approach was that rather than just focusing specifically on cases with corruption and value is more than 5 million rand, we should rather stagger it and say, well, look, in fact, let's say less than 1 million rand, between 1 million rand and 3 million rand, between 3 million rand and 5 million rand,
and then let's say between 5 million rand and 10 million rand, then we will be able to make a determination of how we are actually doing. Now, simply relying on this one determiner of 5 million rand is not very helpful, because remember that in any event, Asset for Future successes rely on actually having those cases. And they do not get involved right from the beginning in determining, are you dealing here with a 5 million rand? So you have to actually go out and start identifying those cases. It's still a challenge. We are aware of it, and we shall be addressing it. And then the question of the state capture, and I think that also ties in with the issue raised by Honorable Swart, the seven legs in respect of state capture. I deliberately refrained from actually going into the rest of the seven legs, save to emphasize the fact that we have one matter that is currently before court. I'm more comfortable about giving progress in respect of matters where we have already indicted. I'm less comfortable in going into the details of matters where we are merely guiding investigations and have not yet reached a stage where we as prosecutors are expected to take a decision. I spoke mainly about Asina because we have already taken a decision. We are in essence with the matters. The rest of the matters, our involvement is merely in respect of guiding the investigations. I really trust you will understand how my reluctance. Others may have a different approach, but I have some reservations for as well as for legal reasons, by the way. And then, well, the AFU where we did not succeed. And I think it's important to understand that the reversal of, well, our not succeeding is not in relation of the whole preservation order. It's only on a portion. But we are currently busy with crafting a new application that addresses that issue. So that matter is currently being dealt with. And then there was the question of, and I would prefer to frame it rather generally, of issues surrounding the top leadership, which you raised. It's indeed a difficult issue. That strictly speaking do not sit with either the national director, the acting national director or the NPA. And perhaps the critical question that you raise is, well, some of this top leadership has had this and that, but they're still back. Our understanding or my understanding, and I'm supported by proper views and opinions on that. My understanding of where the NPA sits or where I sit as acting NDPP is, there is nothing for me in law which would say, well, look, they should not be at work. There is a different view. In fact, the applicants in the matter have raised a different view, but then they are afraid to approach the court because I cannot make an order of court. So I am only believing in staying within what the law says. Now, if there is an opposing view that says, well, look, you can do this and it will be within the law, then that's fine. But I have not received any such view. So I personally, as an officer of the court, am just being cautious. And then the issue of curator fees. I mean, that has been one of the troubling issues, and I think it's understandable because a number of these matters, once you have had a preservation order, going forward and finalizing, getting a final order, it takes time at times, and a lot of these people resist this. But in the meantime, you have to have a curator and the unfortunate part of it is this fees are disbursed from the NPA budget, interestingly enough, and not from, for example, from the CARA fund. So probably there are normally, Honorable Horan, that you have, where we end up finding ourselves with this audit finding in respect of this, is where we end up carrying a burden that, for me personally, yes, for me, I'm sorry, as well as the Honorable Sir, for me personally, those disbursements should have been coming from, first of all, from the CARA fund. We have had this debate, we've raised it with the minister before. I don't know if my colleague, Mr. Hofmeyer, may have anything to add on that, but that's my answer to that. Steinhoff matter, well, although it's one of the matters that we are currently aware of, at this stage I'm not aware of any in the short term intended prosecution, but obviously it's a matter that we are aware of. There may very well in the near future be developments in that respect, but there aren't, insofar as the NPA is concerned, any developments that we need to report to the committee. I think I've dealt with the issue of the curator fees. The matters where the NPA can come in terms of intervention, such as your cash in transit, your political killings and farm matters, there are such interventions. Unfortunately, I do not have the full information. For example, I do know that in Gauteng, they've had interventions in respect of cash in transit. In KZN, there is currently an intervention where we are represented by one of the DPPs, Advocate Mzinyati, in the joint task team, and I, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's also one such task team in Mpumalanga in respect of the firm matter. So there are such interventions, and then the whether it was a TIF or what, between us and the SIU, I really think that was unfortunate. We have had a discussion. The Minister of Justice called a meeting between us and the SIU. We have said, and we are working on this matter. Where I'm cautious is to actually, bandy around figures which one is unable to ascertain at any stage. But I have been given figures, and we are currently doing a reconciliation of the matters that have been referred, that have been finalized, and others that have been referred for investigations, and the rest of the matters. But there is a history to this whole thing. It was the inconsistent manner in which, throughout the various heads of SIU, these matters were referred to the NPA. At one stage, they were actually referred to the DPPs and the regional offices of the SIU, where they were immediately dealt with. At some stage during the term of another head of the SIU, they were then referred to the DPCI as well as to the NPA. And then recently, after a memorandum of understanding between the former NDPP and the head of the SIU, they were referred directly to the head office in NPA. And unfortunately, that's a long process because somebody has to go through them, do an assessment, refer them either to the various DPPs or to the DPCI. But we are currently working on a prosecution policy that should address that inconsistency. The other question on the state capture that was raised by Honorable Sark, I think I've answered that. And then the issues raised by Honorable Maila, the state capture, I think it's unfortunate, probably now thinking about it, for us, especially in the NPA, as prosecutors, to refer to state capture. Because quite honestly, maybe it's just an appropriate term to make it easier for people to understand what we're talking about. But what we're talking about is, in the first instance, with a report of the public protector that was referred to us, with a recommendation to consider the institution of criminal prosecution. Now, that is just the beginning. The referral does not necessarily mean that you're going to institute a criminal prosecution. First of all, you've got to do an assessment of the evidence that was presented before the public protector. And bearing in mind, by the way, that almost 99% of the evidence that was presented there is inadmissible in a criminal trial. So you have to start almost afresh. It's a good pointer towards the identification of criminal conduct, and really that's where we are. And fortunately for the prosecution, it was not really pretty easy, but we were able to determine much earlier on the institution of a criminal prosecution in respect of the Estina matter. I think because the evidence was much easier to collect. Now, that is not the case in respect of the other legs. So, in other words, the other six legs, and that's the challenge that we have. So, from where we sit as prosecutors, that is not a parallel process. For us, the law is pretty clear. Our role is to institute criminal proceedings. And in order to do that, we need the police to do an investigation. We do an assessment if a crime has been committed, and then we can then institute a criminal prosecution. What is happening during the commission or other processes may very well be helpful. But our work is trial directed, court directed in a sense. So I hope that explains it. And then the moratorium on the filling of posts. I don't know, Anika, you can deal with that. But the problem is actually much deeper than that. It's no longer for us a question of the moratorium of filling of posts. It's a question that we are losing prosecutors in particular, and because of the budget cuts, our budget has not grown. When those posts become vacant, we are unable to fill them because our budget has shrinked to such an extent that we are unable, in fact, to pay even the current bodies that we have. And that is the dilemma that we currently face. IJS, we are part of the IJS. We have a representative there from the National Prosecution Service. I think the frustrating thing, for us as prosecutors, is it appears to be still at an early stage for it to be helpful in terms of, you know, the management of prosecution cases. That's it for me. I don't know, Hanika, you can deal with just... I think on overspending, the overspending that you raised, and the 34 million run by, yes.
Okay, the question on the Irish spending, okay, come to open this, if you look at my presentation again, slide 24, there was the two overspending in the previous financial year. The 34 million is related to the compensation of employees. Now, this one is to pay the cost of the and performance bonuses. Now, what's happening in the past, our budget growth for our compensation is in the region of 5.9%. So the cost of living adjustments is between 6 and 7%, and 2016 was also 7.6%. So the cost of living adjustment is higher than the budget that we receive. So we can't pay that cost of living. In the past, National Treasury would compensate the difference. But in the last 3 years, they've been saying that we have to fund it from our own baseline. And we can't fund that higher projected cost of living anymore. And that's why we've overspent the 34 million last year.
The other spin on goods and services is also, that was the payment of our Microsoft licenses that we did in cooperation with the Department of Justice, where they gave us the go-ahead to pay that with the agreement that they will give us the funds at the end of the financial year. The moratorium on the filling of our post is we will have to keep that moratorium on the filling of post because currently we can't even pay our warm bodies. So we can't advertise any posts because we don't have any funds. And this is also now the historic event of the higher cost of living that was implemented against the budget increase. So until we've got money available, we can lift the moratorium on the filling of funds. So the only thing is if they give us more.
Just one thing. So you are the ones who impose the moratorium on yourselves?
Yes,
oh,
yes, we did in order to avoid
overspending. Can just to clarify on the moratorium. It's historical. The moratorium is historical. So there was a time when it was introduced across the board, where it was said and what was one the well. Let me say the department. TPSA or
yes,
the Department of Public Service Administration and Treasury said, well, because you're not going to be getting any increments, there must be no filling of vacant posts.
Okay.
Yeah, to tighten the belt. But over the years, other departments were actually able to convince TPSA and Treasury to fill those posts. But that was before there was a budget cut across the board. So when the budget cut came into the picture, we realized that in any event, even if we wanted to fill these posts, to motivate for them, we won't be able because the budget has been cut. And so that's why she is saying that when at this stage the moratorium is self-imposed. At that time, it was across the board.
Perhaps I can just respond to the issue of malicious prosecutions. I think the name is a little bit of a misnomer because you don't have to prove any element of maliciousness. It's simply the prosecutor gets a docket on a Monday morning with dozens of other dockets, and there is not enough evidence in the docket to actually warrant the person being charged. So we do look at each judgment against us, whether there is action that is necessary to be taken. But you know, in most cases, I think our view is that it is understandable in the pressure in the courts that the prosecutor may have misjudged. Our most serious case, so you know, those cases we don't get very big judgments because there's not been that much prejudice. Our more serious cases is where somebody does get detained for a long time without bail as a result of a prosecution where there never was a case or where the court felt there was not enough evidence in the docket to put the case on the roll, basically. So in those cases, the judgment can go up very high. I think the largest case I'm aware of is about $2 million that we were forced to pay out in one case. But generally, even there, the claims are not that high. So I think generally, every judgment we get, we do look at whether there is any action that the NPA should take. I can't recall any case where we said the disciplinary action is necessary against the prosecutor. But in some cases, we have recommended to our training division, who does regular training for the prosecutors, that there are aspects of the law on which training is required, and that does come up fairly regularly. Just things, often the more obscure parts of the law, but there are areas where the prosecutor may not have been sufficiently familiar with that part of the law. The sort of big cases, the big judgments that there has been, has been when somebody is charged with rape, they should have been denied bail, they're not denied bail, more people get raped by this very same person while on bail And then we get taken to court for saying, why did we not refuse bail in this case? And their judgments do go into the hundreds of thousands of cases because of the trauma that the people suffer as a result of that. But those cases are pretty, you know, a couple a year. It's not large volumes, but those are the cases where very big judgments are made against us and very often against the police at the same time.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Just on the first question, I think it related to the issue of collusion with Hmong's lawyers, particularly in respect of Department of Health and Correctional Services. I think that should be part of the
And the lawyer.
Collusion between the prosecution and the lawyer. Is that the allegation? Well, then I'm going to ask the acting NDPP to answer that question because I'm not aware of those kinds of issues.
But it's not referring to that one of state attorneys and lawyers.
State attorneys and advocates that are briefed by.
Yes, in terms of briefing. The ACT,
it's not the
NPA. No, it's not NPA.
Well, there's certainly not with prosecutors and lawyers collusion. I mean, that would be dealt with very seriously by the NPA. The other issue relates to emerging crimes. I mean, the MPA has ongoing programs training with the prosecutors. And, of course, we also train police investigators and police from time to time. So I think this particular issue can be flagged so that we can look to what extent the issue that you raised with the IDs of people being taken still and those cases not being dealt with. I think it's something that we can flag to look into, but just to say there is ongoing training programs with the prosecutors and the police in terms of new crime types that emerge. The question of language, again, we're in the hands of the courts as the prosecution, and we're aware that the Chief Justice has indicated that English will be the official language of record in our courts. Of course, we do our best as prosecutors to deal with cases in all languages, and we do have prosecutors. We've got a diverse prosecuting authority. And so, of course, we do what we can to ensure that all official languages are used, particularly from an access to justice point of view. But as far as the actual cases in courts are concerned, there we still rely on the interpretation services that's supplied by the Department of Justice. And we should bear in mind that there has been a recent decision made by the Chief Justice that the official language of record will be English. I think we dealt with the issue around the TRC cases. I think it was dealt with by the acting NDPP in the absence, sir. And I think the malicious prosecutions was also dealt with by Mr. Hofmeyer. The delays in actual prosecutions, the question of overcrowding, and the MPA opposing bail. We have ongoing interaction with the department, with the DCS, as far as...
Sorry for interruption. How many questions are left?
I think it's...
What is your problem, ma'am?
Oh, no. No. No, you don't know why I'm asking. Be tolerant, ne? You don't know why I'm asking, because I want to add additional minutes to NPA in order to complete all those questions. Then you need to apologize to me.
I think
okay, how many minutes do you have, sir?
Two questions
Okay. Okay. You have additional 3 minutes to complete.
On the question of the overcrowding, the prosecution works very closely with the DCS. We've got ongoing meetings regarding remand detainees who are in custody, and we receive monthly lists from the DCS, particularly those people where bail has been fixed of R1,000, but people cannot pay. So cases are referred back to court before the next postponement date, so that we can place those cases again on the rolls and try and get those people released. So we do a lot to ensure that only the right people remain in custody. But of course, there are still people where magistrates fix bail and they cannot afford to pay the bail. But those cases as well, we try to do our best to ensure that people are released. The challenge we have, of course, with the opposition to bail and the question of overcrowding is that the prosecution is often put in a very difficult position. And we heard Mr. Hoffmeyer now saying that there are instances where claims are instituted because crimes are being committed by people who are released on bail. So this is a serious challenge to us in the prosecution. The judgment call that prosecutors must make on a day-to-day basis, because on the one hand pressure is being put on them because of overcrowding, but on the other hand we have a serious responsibility to ensure that people who commit violent crimes are kept in custody. It's a very difficult balancing act and decision that we have to take on a daily basis. As far as our success rate in terms of our conviction rate, the question was what other forms of punishment are we doing? Of course, there are many other types of punishments that prosecutors would ask for, not just incarceration. And a large percentage of cases are dealt with where other forms of punishment is given. And then lastly, on the restorative justice and the mediation issue, which is linked to the question of punishment, the MPA does have a process of restorative justice where it's not just about prosecutions. We call the victims of crime and the accused persons, and often the families are involved in those processes. And then we would divert and mediate those cases and resolve those prosecutions without necessarily taking those cases to court. So we do our best to try and ensure that our approach is not just to prosecute. But again, we've got to ensure that the serious cases are in fact prosecuted. And these are the less serious offences in which we look at other ways in terms of restorative justice, mediation and diversion to deal with those matters. I think those were the questions I
answered.
I was just reminded by the chairperson, there's one issue that remains, that is the Ama Timor matter, what happened after the inquest finding Rodriguez, the person who has been found to have been responsible for Timor, amongst others. We are busy with the preparation for trial. The preparation is underway. There is a procedure that has been assigned to the matter. We need to find out how far they are with the preparation. But there is now clearly a finding that Rodriguez is nothing to blame for Timor.
Thank you. 3 minutes for follow-up.
Yes. Sir, with due respect, you have successfully avoided some few questions that are very important. One, I asked people who did not go to jail and people who went there and were refused amnesty. And you said that has been dealt with. Yes, not been dealt with. Did not deal that particular one.
Yes,
no, I didn't say TRC, man. I say people went to the TRC, who did not go to TRC, so it's not a TRC matter. They therefore did not get amnesty. And those who went to amnesty did not get amnesty. Those are specific cases. I'm saying that is the first thing. The second thing, on the question of the language, there is an Act of Parliament, Act number 12 of 2012, that specifically says you must have a unit in the department that promotes the other language. And therefore, when you say so that it's access to justice, now, instead of having somebody interpreting into the record, so that the record is in English, you do what is done in the Western Cape. Prosecution is done in Western Cape in Afrikaans. Everything is done in Afrikaans, but there is now a interpretation into that. What I'm trying to say is that, now can you listen so that you get this thing clearly. Now, the second thing, that the third thing that you did not answer properly was the question of when you say, because I specifically speak an area next to the sea and say, now I'm talking about what I did last week. Police don't know, and prosecutors don't know, and people now every day, the elderly people are also robbed by these people every day. And I'm saying that, can you, in your transformation action, attend to these problems in this way? You just say, no, it's being done, you know, we are being trained. I'm not satisfied with that. If you're saying to me, give me a commitment, I say, I was not aware that this community are being robbed in this manner. We will make it an urgent matter to attend to this. You just say, oh, it's being trained. I'm not happy with that. So can you please give a commitment and say A, B, C, and D things are going to happen in that manner to try and attend to the problems of the underprivileged people. Thank you.
On the issue of languages, I don't know if NPA will have a way of responding to it, because I understand he responded to say they are in the court's hand. Because it's normally the DOJ CD was the one which was responsible to respond to that. Because presiding officers are under DOJ CD.
No, I'm not talking about presiding officers. All I'm saying,
now let's get this again.
No,
the prosecution.
Honorable Mpumlana, when you speak, I keep quiet. That's how he responded by saying, we are in the court's hand. They can't just bona, kabu bona, but because prosecution, you know, in a court, you are a lawyer yourself, you're an advocate. You know how the proceedings are conducted in a court of law, especially in relation to criminal cases. So that's how he responded. And then on the second issue of TRC, can you respond in 1 minute,
I think
through you, Chair. But time is not on our side.
Wait a minute. You are answering for them. Wait a minute.
Sorry, we need order here.
You
but
know what?
A dialogue here, and we've got to respect the Chair. The Honourable Member is not respecting the Chair here.
You know what? The issue of language, I don't think you have responded.
No,
let them respond on the issue of TRC. 1 minute, NDPP.
No, there are two persons. With respect to TRC, with respect to this members may come to us. The first one is through the TRC report. But
it will be through the TRC report itself. In other words, where you would have the TRC itself saying, well, look, I mean, there are these people who, there's evidence that they've committed offences, but they have not appeared before. But we don't have many of those. In fact, if they were, we would have started with it. And then the second, the second way, it's matters which had already been investigated by the police, for example. And in the majority of them, those would have been closed already. For example, as undetected. Now, until
until those matters come to our attention, there is nothing that we can do. So as I'm saying, there are two ways. Okay, either there is an indication from the TRC, or there are dockets that we can actually start working on, or somebody who knows, in respect of whom there is nothing in the docket or there's nothing in the TRC, comes forward and says, well, such and such a person is committed. Now, if we get that information, obviously we will act on it.
Okay. Thank you so much, honorable members. Thank you, Acting National Director of Prosecution, and your team. Thank you so much for well prepared presentation. You are well excused. Are you leaving today? Safe flight to Pretoria, and those who remain here in Cape Town on the bed. And then for tomorrow, honorable members, we are starting at exactly 9 o'clock. We have managed to secure for 2 hours the old assembly chamber. It will be public protector, it will be South African Human Rights Commission, and then information regulator in the afternoon.
Thank you. Public Enterprises is meeting at the Townhouse Hotel. So when it comes to venues, and this might be something else, but there are three committees that are meeting at the hotel next door, which is much bigger accommodation, much wider, and this is something we need to consider in the future.
Yes.
In the future.
We have self-imposed freezing. We have self-imposed freezing.
Self-imposed what?
Budget.
Thank you.